The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Welcome to episode number 8 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we have some shout-outs to give to you all. There have been some people doing things in the community that we would like to highlight and say thank you for before we get into our reviews and everything else. First and foremost, Bruce Richard, who writes for The Mothership, wrote an article yesterday and included all of our names as names of players in his article.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it also it taught me what Knowledge Pool does. I had never seen that card or knew how crazy it can be in a multiplayer format, but learned something new. Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, if you're not reading Bruce's articles, you need to go ahead and do that. Not only is he a good writer, but he also hosts pre-releases in his local area for the kids. And he takes pictures of them, and you get to see a bunch of really adorable kids either discovering Magic for the first time or coming into their own playing Magic. And it's just very heartwarming, so you should look at those whenever he posts those pictures. Mm-hmm. Eric Froelich closed out an episode of Constructed Resources with a 20 to 30 minute discussion about women in Magic and hit on a lot of really good points. I was really pleasantly surprised by this.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny. So me and Ifra were talking before he started recording that day, and he was like, why do you think there's not more like women in the competitive community? And I typed out all my reasons, and then he brought them all up on the podcast.
Awesome.
So it was kind of funny because I was like, oh, maybe he'll put in some more stuff. And he did add his own take on it, but it was just kind of funny.
Yeah, I recognize some talking points that were mentioned on our show as well. And I was pleasantly surprised from top to bottom. Somebody had told me to listen to it, and I was like, oh, great. And me being me, I assumed it was going to be bad. I'm like, oh, no, he didn't like us. He's calling us out. Shit's going down. And I was bracing myself, and I was like, oh, here we go. And I didn't disagree with a single thing he said. The only minor quibble was that he kept saying females. Like,
yeah.
We were Ferengi.
Yeah, that's just a pet peeve that I have, though, so I don't know. It bugged me a little bit, but I'm willing to forgive people who say that.
Yeah, it was not enough to discredit it or shut the whole thing down. Like I said, I was very happy with it. The part I especially liked is when he mentioned the double standards, how guys can be assertive and aggressive and roar, and then if we do it, it's we're cold-hearted, we're aloof, and we're bitches. And right. I felt like I was in church. I just had my fan going, and I was like,
Yeah, I remember that.
Preach, brother.
Yeah. That was even something we talked about on I think it was the first episode, how, like, if a man is being serious, then he is, like, in the zone, and if a woman is being serious, then she's cold, you know, that double standard. So it did sound like we were kind of on the same wavelength.
Yeah, and I'm always really happy when people at Ifro's level speak out on social issues, because there is that meritocracy in Magic, and there are people who will only listen to you if you are quote-unquote good. So people at Ifro's level, people will play a deck because Ifro plays it. They will buy cards because Ifro tells them to. So if Ifro's telling them these things exist, watch out for them and be better, they will do it because he tells them to. So the audience that he can possibly reach with that is quite large. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy to hear that be discussed.
Yeah.
So we also received our first entry in the Most Beautiful LGS Bathroom Contest. I forwarded it to you all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a week or two left. So if you are listening and you have been to an LGS bathroom that's really wowed you, please send us your pictures at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. You can tweet them to us. $25 gift certificate to Cool Stuff Inc. on the line. Please send us your stuff. We want to see, and we want to give your store some love. And to close out the shout-outs, we've received some more positive reviews.
Yeah.
From iTunes. Three more, actually. From first one from KCalkins82. This is a podcast that will get a lot of praise for being an all-women show about magic, but don't let that blind you to the fact that this is just an awesome podcast. Thank you so much. A name I can't pronounce. We're just going to call you Sin. Thank you so much for this. The new movement on the magic scene. We are a movement.
Awesome.
Yeah. I like the sound of that.
When I think movement, I think of the Beyonce video where we're in our military garb under a bridge and girls. Just me?
Maybe just you.
It's just me. new movement on the magic scene, refreshing, entertaining, and hands down awesome. Hashtag Lumpy Doodahs.
Yes.
I have
Katie, you started it.
Lumpy Doodahs.
And last but not least, Tim and Kat. I'm assuming they are a couple. These women are awesome, and this has quickly become my favorite ensemble cast. Definitely the cast I look forward to the most. Keep up the good work. Thank you all for the reviews. We really do appreciate them, and please keep them coming. So let's go ahead and get started. Two major events that I took notice of this week. I admit I didn't pay much attention to the Japanese GP because I'm not very proficient in Legacy. So it did happen. Some great people did well in that, but that wasn't really my focus. Let's start off with GP Krakko. Standard.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian Alex Hain took the whole thing down.
Mm-hmm.
Paula Vittor Domodorosa made top eight as well, along with Sam Pardee, who we know from the U.S. Five Esper Dragons list in the top eight.
That's a lot.
Esper.
One blue-black control, and then there was an Ojutai Bant and a Jeskai Tokens. Control players, keeping it strong.
Yeah, that Ojutai Bant deck looks pretty sweet. Like, I would maybe sleeve that up when I was looking at the different Esper Dragons lists. I was like, ooh, forget all that. Ojutai Bant's where it's at.
Is it like heroic?
To find the list again to remember what was in it.
It's like Caryatid, Lion, Den Protector, Raptor, mm-hmm. Ojutai, Courser, Serac, and then some like Valorous Dance.
Mastery, it was enough in it to make me interested.
So it sounds like a mid-range shell.
Yeah.
Okay, because I know Tom Ross was trying to make Bant Heroic a thing, and it looked scary. Like, I'd seen people play it, and Dromoka's Command really gave that deck some gas, and I thought that might have been it.
Yeah, that card's real good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, did you all take a look at the different Esper Dragons list? Was there one that you enjoyed more than the others?
Looking at this many Esper lists actually made me want to, like, beat the deck instead of play the deck. I feel like it's a little out of control. Something needs to come along and keep it in its place. But they all looked really similar from what mm-hmm. I saw.
Yeah, it does seem like the deck of the week now. I know Jerry Thompson made a video about it, and then Brett Nelson made a video about it, and they've been sort of comparing notes. So it does seem like a whole bunch of people are hopping on that train.
And what can beat Esper Dragons? Because I'm not a control player, so I don't really know what y'all are weak against. So if you were playing this deck, you know, you're all proficient control mages, what would you not want to see across the table from you?
I've heard that Abzan Aggro is a bad matchup, or like a pretty questionable matchup, just because they have a lot of discard, and they also have Rexxas the Death Dealer, which can be difficult to deal with, and Fleecemane Lion, if it becomes monstrous, seems like it could be difficult to deal with, though I guess they have Foul Tongue Shriek, which is good for that. And I heard Paul Chion was testing the deck a lot, and he was saying on his stream today that he thinks that the Ojutai Bant deck that we were just talking about is another matchup to watch out for, just because of the Den Protectors and the Death Mist Raptors and all of those very resilient creatures.
I have to admit, I'm not quite sold on the Maternal Witness, which is what I call Den Protector. I'm not really sold on the Maternal Witness Death Mist Circle Jerk. Like, I know it's a thing, but just for me, it's just too many bells and whistles. I just can't. I can't get into it.
Yeah, but it gets out of hand, though. Like, when you're playing against it, sometimes it's like, oh, this is happening right now. I'll talk about that later in the games day section of things. Okay. it's out of hand.
Yeah, a few people in my area have been testing it out in, like, junk and or jund. And being able to get back all the rhinos is really difficult, because eventually you run out of counter spells, and then you're not having as much fun anymore.
And can't you even, like, loop them? Like, can't you... So you morph the Maternal Witness, and you flip her over, which gets you the Death Mist back and also gets you an additional card?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Death Mist, I think, is up to $20 now, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened one from the pre-release. It's still in the pre-release box, actually, because I was like, I ain't gonna need that. And then I just saw it today, and I just happened to mouse over it to see what the price was, and I was like, whoa, I've got a $20 card that I'm not even using. One thing I noticed about the GP Krakow metagame compared to the SCG Providence one, which we're about to talk about, is how different the top eights were.
Oh, like, yeah.
The top eight at Krakow was all control decks, mostly control decks, with the exception of bans and tokens. And then Star City was almost all aggro.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of mid-rangey, actually. I know Abzan was the most popular deck in all the most popular color combination in all of its flavors. But it seemed like there were a lot of Abzan control decks, and Abzan Reanimator took the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was a Sultai Reanimator deck. And so it just seemed kind of mid-rangey.
Sure, I can agree with that. I do see a mono red, and I see an Abzan aggro and a Jeskai aggro.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a little aggro in there.
And I think it's worth looking at the top 16 talking about Star Cities, because a lot of them do, you know, miss it on Breakers or whatever. And there's a few Jeskai, a Teemer Dragons got 10th. And then the first Esper deck that you see got 16th, and that was Esper Dragons.
Right.
Interesting. Why do you think the metas were so different?
I mean, maybe people just expected it to be just a different meta when they went to the Grand Prix. I don't know. I was surprised to see that many control decks. I mean, honestly, I would have expected to see, you know, Abzan in there or some other things, but maybe it just did so well at the Pro Tour and other things that they were like, why the hell not?
Mm-hmm. And I'm always curious if there's like a cultural difference. Like, you know, I didn't look at Grand Prix results from Kyoto, but it seems like, you know, if they have standard and then we have standard, we just have wildly different decks.
Oh, yeah.
In general.
Yeah, I can agree with that. One thing that stood out to me about both of these events was some of the participants. So there was a gentleman who made top eight in Krakow who was 17 years old,
mm-hmm.
Martin Muller, and the young man who won SCG Providence is Oliver Tomachko at 14 years old.
Whoa. What are we doing with our lives?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Did you watch him play by any chance? Like, he was playing pretty tight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get to check out any coverage yet, but I'm going to have to do that after this.
Yeah. Yeah, I was definitely watching him play, and I went on, I appeared on MTG Focus the other day, and we were talking about how we feel about younger players and you know, whether or not they, you know, I think a lot of times they get missed. They get underestimated, where people will look at this and think, oh, I got a pair down, or I'm getting a free buy, and then the kid whoops your butt. And there's been a lot of discussion lately about these kids who are just coming up through the ranks, and they know their shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know I learned to play Magic from someone who was active on the Junior Super Series when he was a kid, and he actually quit Magic for a while because he felt like a lot of people underestimated him, and a lot of the older players didn't treat him with a lot of respect. And that was, you know, something that he didn't really like about the community, and so he stopped playing for a little while. And it's nice to see now that there are kids who are doing well in tournaments, and people are actually giving them the respect that they deserve. I think that's awesome.
What advantages do you think somebody at that age has? Because one of the questions Roberto asked me is, what are they doing that we're not? Because we talked about that, you know, how we do feel, you know, sort of like the you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And here these young kids are coming up through the ranks, you know. Do you think that they have anything on us, that they're doing anything differently?
I don't think so. Maybe they just have someone, you know, maybe active in their life that is, you know, encouraging them to, you know, play a game or do something, you know, other than maybe, you know, sports or something, or maybe someone in their family plays and they're able to encourage them to do that. So, you know, if you start from a young age, you know, going into game store being like, this is what I do every Friday, is go and play Magic. Maybe I go with my dad or friends or something, and then it just becomes what you do. Then I think you can, you know, stay fairly consistent with it and then eventually go to higher level events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as I mean, this might seem like a stretch, but when you're young, your brain is a lot more malleable. Like, that's why it's easier to learn languages and stuff. And I think that the rate of improvement when you're young is a lot higher than your rate of improvement if you start playing any game when you're older. They just learn quicker because that's how kids are designed. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. And they have, like, a lot more time.
Yeah.
I mean, 14 is, like, an 8th grade or something, like,
freshman
in high school.
Yeah.
They don't have a full-time job or multiple jobs or, you know, a college load or something like that to hold them back. And so maybe they get to play every single night and test all the time. I don't know.
I've definitely felt a sense of envy when I see, you know, good younger players, because I took a 10-year break from the game. I stopped around Urza's Legacy. And even when I played as a kid, I would argue that I didn't really play, like, quotation marks. Like, I was playing in friends' basements. I didn't know anything about tournaments. I didn't know anything like that. I certainly didn't have the money to buy good decks or play in tournaments. And I just feel like I missed out on so much. And that, you know, had I been playing all this time, had I been playing at 15 through 31, which is the age I am now, maybe I would be a better loser. Maybe I could judge metagames better. Maybe I could know what fat to trim from my deck. You know, I just feel like, and it's really hard to learn at 31 when you've missed all that. And, you know, I do feel like I'm just never going to learn certain things had I stuck with the game. So in addition to the standard event at Providence, there was the Modern 5K, because, you know, I love some Modern. And a lot of Affinity this time.
Yeah.
I was very happy to see that. There was a blue-black fairies deck, which made top 8.
Spicy.
It's funny, I don't know if I ever told you this, but Chicago loves them some fairies.
I think you did tell me that once.
Oh my goodness. Did I tell you, Katie and Chris, did I tell you the story?
I have not heard the story.
I will tell you the story. Sure. So I went to the last Modern PTQ when it was just a PTQ last season. I think it was in August. And we went to an event in Chicago, and 4 of the top 8 were Blue-Black Fairies. Which was a deck that I didn't even expect. It certainly wasn't making any national waves. And I just heard from the judges that if you're in Chicago, Joe Bernal specifically has, like, really championed fairies, and they love them some fairies. So if you're going to play in that area and you're playing Modern, Spellsetter Sprites, Vendilion Clicks, all that. The one that, like, champions and bounces stuff or taps. Oh, yeah.
Just, oh, Mistbind Click?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just be ready for fairies.
Yeah. Just be ready.
I didn't see it coming either, and I was completely floored. And then there was an Esper Tokens list, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, that was the 8th place one, and it had, like, Monastery Mentor and Friends, and I don't know. Those decks are really awesome.
Yeah. And then cool. A Lady Magic player, Rachel Dillon, came in 15th with Affinity. Hey, girl.
Yay.
You go, girl.
We see you playing robots. So I was very happy about that. Speaking of Modern, Hallie, did you end up going to the PPTQ?
Oh, God. I had the worst day on Saturday.
No.
So my PPTQ was sold out before I could even register for it. It's absurd. I tried to register a couple days in advance, and it was capped at 80 players. And this was a store that ran a standard PPTQ last season that only got, like, 40 to 45 players. So I wasn't expecting Modern to sell out, because I don't know a ton of people who play Modern locally, or at least not in person. But apparently they have, like, a good crowd at their Saturday night Modern tournaments, and all those people turned up, and it was, like, sold out days in advance. And I was just like, okay, guess I'm not playing in this event.
Wow.
Yeah, they got 80 people. That was really impressive, and, like, way more than I was expecting. So good for them. And the finals I heard was Blue Red Twin against Jund, and Jund won.
Pilot.
Yay! It was Jerry Thompson, so congratulations, Jerry. And since I didn't get to go to the PPTQ, I consoled myself with some Magic Online 8-4s, and those did not go very well either.
What were you playing?
So I did some Dragons of Tarkir drafts. I drafted Blue-Black Control twice, and then I drafted the green-red Ferocious Formidable deck. And in 2 of those matches, I lost in round 1 because my opponent landed a Narset that I couldn't deal with. Like, in the second round, my opponent had a Narset and an Icefall Regent, So, like, I played on turn three, I play a face down Ojutai Interceptor, and I'm just like, oh yeah, I got my four power flyer. I'm going to get in for the beats. Like, turn four, I turn it face up, hit for four, and I'm way ahead on board. And then, like, my opponent lands a fifth land, slams the Icefall Regent, locks it down, and I was just like, oh well.
GG.
Yeah, and yeah, you do not know pain and frustration until your opponent rebounds a Dragon Lord's Prerogative with Narset with an Icefall Regent in play, so you can't counter it. It was ridiculous.
That's a situation where I would have looked at my opponent and said, I'm glad I came too.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my day on Saturday. That and I went to Record Store Day, but
woo-woo.
But yeah.
Did you get any nice finds at the record store?
There were a couple records I wanted that the record store unfortunately didn't have, and I was kind of sad about it. But I got Time Out by Dave Brubeck, which is Kirby's favorite record.
Because your dog has favorite records?
Yeah, he loves jazz.
Huh. Katie, Dr. Doolittle, is this a thing?
Officially, no. Unofficially, I suppose. Watson doesn't have a favorite jam, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
Maybe he needs to listen to jazz, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, just any instrumental music. I play some jazz and some classical for him, and he loves it.
Interesting.
Does he, like, yodel along, or does he, like, dance or anything?
His ears perk up, and his ears go in all different directions. He dances with his ears.
I see.
So, Chris, I understand that you almost got into a fight at Record Day.
What?
Weren't you tweeting about people picking on you?
Yes. Like, I got there at, like, a little after 6, and there were two guys in front of me, and so I was alternating between listening to my iPod and watching coverage, because I think they just started up when I got there. And I took, I think, my headphones out for a second, or I paused it, and I bent down because I have a pair of shoes that have, like, a very big tongue on them. Mm-hmm. And I rushed out the door, so I didn't think about the fact that my pants were kind of tucked into them a little bit, but I mean, they're baggy jeans, whatever. So they were still tucked in, so I bent down to untuck them, and they start snickering at me like, oh my god, she noticed. It's like, excuse you? Who are you? You're up with me like at 6 in the morning too, buddy, to get some records. Like, if we're really going to talk about, like, fashion faux pas, let's not. So it was just, like, too much, so I'm just, like, tweeting, like, I can't believe this. So I took a picture of them, not with their faces or anything, but still, it's like, you're going to call me out for dressing or whatever. You're a bunch of cliches. I'm so sorry. But it was just not fun. And then I ran into them at the second store, and I was like, what are you going to say now? It's like, we're just here to get records, man. I just want to be peace and love. I don't want to get into a fight with anybody. But yeah, I think I was a little uncalled for and pretty childish considering, but whatever. I had a good time. It's all that matters. I also went like Hallie did. I got up at 4 a.m. to drive up to Milwaukee to get my records. I was in and out at the first place. The second place, I kind of milled around for about 45 minutes, ran into some random lady who works at headquarters for my work, and I'm like, hey, I didn't know you got down like this. And she's like, yeah, I'm really into ska and all this, whatever. And so we chatted. I got my stuff, and I waited in line for about an hour, and then I rushed back home and put my deck together so that I could go to game day. It was kind of an impromptu. I had so much fun.
Yay.
I don't even know, like, why. Like, it was like I just was on happy pills, like, the whole time. You know, I sleeved up Adrian Sullivan's Blue Black that he took to the Pro Tour. Round one, I played Mono Black Warriors, got swept. The dash was a little bit difficult to deal with. At first, I wasn't sure kind of what his game plan was. He was just a little too quick for me. Then he tried to tell me that he could redirect to Ashiok with Mardu Shadow Spear's ability to try to make Ashiok lose loyalty.
No.
So he turns everything sideways, and he's like, I think he said, like, four. And I was like, don't you mean, like, two? And he was like, no, four, because this trigger, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait a second. And I said, I understand that I will lose, I will lose life if you attack me, or he will lose loyalty from this attack. I said, but you just saying they're attacking, their ability has no relevance here.
Yeah, because the ability of reading the card now, it says the opponent loses one life. And if I remember correctly, Katie can correct me if I'm wrong, but losing life can't be redirected.
It cannot.
Right, and so he, but the way he was, like, trying to explain it to me, he kind of got, like, a little in my face about it, but I was like, and he's like, oh yeah, I guess that's true, and I'm like, it's fine, you know, no worries, whatever, but it was just kind of, like, a weird thing to try to very adamantly explain to me that this was how it works. It's like, no, I know, dude. But he wasn't, like, a bad dude. It was just kind of, like, a weird moment. Round two. Of course I would play the mirror. So I sit down and I'm like,
fun!
Oh, no. So I won game one. We ended up drawing game two. The first game, I just outpiloted him with it. I was able to get out my stuff before him. But he's a good guy to play against, so we had a good time. Really fun was he put out his Dragonlord Silmgar. He took my Ashiok, was able to downfall it, get it back right away. I also silenced the Believers, his Silumgar, the Drifting Death, and his Icefall Regent, so I had to pay a little extra because of Icefall Regent, but...
Wait. You said silence the Believers on Silumgar, the Drifting Death?
Oh. It doesn't... That has hexproof.
Or maybe it was the other one. Maybe it was the other Silumgar.
Okay.
It might have been. Yeah, no, because he pointed out the hexproof thing to me. I think I tried to do something else.
Okay.
So you know, maybe it was the other Silumgar. Just got a little jazzed up there. But yeah, no, so that was pretty good because I had to pay extra for the Icefall Regent, and then he's like, crap. So I was able to clear him out that way. But like I said, we drew game two. We went to go to game three, and we really didn't have any time. He's like, you got it. It's fine. No big. Round three... I got swept by green-white. Den Protector is a definite issue. he kept bringing back Hunter's Prowess with it, so that was like, ugh. Like, he loves that card. He's the only person I know that really plays it, but he loves that
Hunter's
card.
Hunter's Prowess. Is that the one where you, I can't think of it.
Is that the one where you give things trample and then you draw cards?
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that card.
So he was, like, bringing it back. I think he put it on his, like, Death Mist Raptor a couple times and, like, everything. And I was like, for real right now? Okay. But, like, so the first game when he beat me, it wasn't that bad. But, like, the second game, we just kept going. And it was just, like, not fun after a while. Like, it wasn't even a back-and-forth moment. It was just kind of like, is this over yet? Please kill me. I have, like, nothing for you.
I have to pee.
Right, exactly. But, you know, he's a nice guy. But I did have to tell him, I'm like, I'm very sorry. I said, but that was not very enjoyable for me. I'm just going to be honest. And then round four, I swept Mono Red Aggro.
Yay!
It felt so good. It was the deck I was so concerned about. I was very concerned about that matchup. So the night before, I'm like talking to my ex. I'm like, what are we going to do about this? You got to help me with this. Like, I'm very concerned. He's like, well, just, you know, do what you would normally do and maybe throw this in and this in. And I'm like, I really need to beat this deck. Because I figured a couple people would probably be on it because of the Pro Tour. And then one of the girls that goes to my store, I know she plays it. And one of our other friends was going to be piloting it. So, Drown in Sorrow, Bioblight, Rika's Cure, Silence Believers, Liliana Vess, all my MVPs. They did amazing, amazing work.
Liliana Vess in against Mono Red Aggro.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I would think you would take it out for that.
I kept it in because I figured if I could get Ugin quicker to the top of my deck by putting him on top after getting rid of all her stuff, if she didn't have, like, a hand... Then I knew what, you know, she was going to draw, or if she got flooded out,
sure.
Which ended up happening. Like, she flooded, I think, both games, because I just kept on getting rid of it. It's like, okay, you dropped your tokens, Bioblight, oh, Drowned in Sorrow, yep, gone. So I just kept on denying her stuff. I did mess up once, though. I had Liliana Vess out, I had out Ashiok, and then I put Ugin on the top of my deck, and stupid me, I'm like, at your end step, I'll crack my fetch. I'm like, stupid. I don't even know where I was at. And then I had to reset it up so I could get it out. But I was able to ultimate it both games. And like once I did it, game one, I think she conceded, I think like at 16. life. And then game two, I went to four and was able to ultimate and get back in the game. Because I was just waiting for her to draw a burn spell. Like, if she draws a burn spell, I'm just fucked. You know, she gets Stoke, I'm out of the game.
Yeah.
But we had so much fun. We were laughing our asses off the whole time. It was just so ridiculous. I couldn't even believe it. And I told her when we sat down, I'm like, girl, I hate your deck. I'm so sorry. She's laughing at me. I'm like, don't disrespect. I don't dislike you. We're cool and everything. I'm like, but your deck just makes me want to cry. And then I ended up beating her, so I don't even know. But we had a good time. And after everything was said and done, I just sat at the shop and talked wrestling with some people. And just, I don't know, I had a really good time. So pretty psyched.
I've done that before, too, where I've used a temple to scry. And then I'll be like, oh, this is a really good card. Attack with Sidisi. And then I mill the top three. I'm like, oh, that's the card I needed. Okay, it's not a zombie. Like, I've done that before too.
It's not a zombie.
I told her after the game, I'm like, I really screwed that up there. That was the mistake that I made. She's laughing at me. I'm like, I'm sorry.
I did something similar to Hallie. I've been getting more into MTGO lately, and I've been playing Lone Pox again because it's an affordable deck to build online. I think I paid like $48 for the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
Which is, I had some of the cards already, but I think the Blood Gas and the Life from the Lomes were the most expensive. Everything else was pretty trivial. But I played in two daily events this weekend, and I continued my trend of being 50-50. I was 2-2 in both of them. Did well against Burn. Lone Pox is a good Burn matchup, which is what I like to hear. I lost to Blue-Red Delver, but then I beat Grixis Delver. So that wasn't so bad. And then I played some really odd decks. I played, like, Rug Storm. Like, it had a storm mechanic, but there were no grape shots. It was Pyromancer Ascension and just Lightning Bolts. And I couldn't help but ask him. I was like, you know, I'm curious, because I'm trying this new being nice thing. I was like, I'm curious why you are going with Rug instead of just the blue-red, because blue-red is so tried and true. And he was like, this isn't Storm. And I was like, but you have Pyromancer's Ascension, which you're, oh God. And he made this really big show of the fact that I'm not a Storm deck. I am Rug this. And I'm like, okay, girl. So that beat me, because I went into it thinking it was a Storm deck. I sideboarded thinking it was a Storm deck, and come to find out it's some strange brew. So I lost to that. And then I played Mono Blue Tron, which is a surprisingly good matchup for me. One thing I was not expecting about the MTGO metagame is it felt like everybody I was playing had Sword of Light and Shadow. I came up against it in three different games against three different opponents, and I was like, is this just a thing? Like, I wasn't expecting this. And then my blue-red Delver opponent had that and a little toy called Vedalken Crackles.
Oh, yeah.
Card is bullshit.
Card is awesome.
I want to know what design was thinking. Like, I want to know what R&D was thinking when they were like, blue needs this. Like, what made you think blue needed that? Like, it just drives me nuts. Like, that card makes me want to punch babies.
Blue needs everything.
I guess so, but I was it's just so hard to deal with. I'm never happy to see it, no matter what deck I'm playing. So I had fun just putzing around. I did make a lot of misplays, which I was aware of, but I was a good girl. I didn't tilt. I had fun with my opponents, and I will probably be playing some more this weekend. I have some more daily events lined up, and I'm really, really enjoying the deck.
Yay!
I have Modern FNM this week, and I think that I'm going to build Grixis Twin.
Ooh.
Girl.
I know. Two colors is just not enough for me. Like, three minimum, four is probably just where I need to be at. But, yeah, I think, like, I'll jam some Tassigers and other good cards. I don't know. I'll probably look at the other Grixis deck and see what it's playing and do something like that, but plus the twin combo, because then you just get to win for free a lot. So
I think you should go all the way. You should play Living Twin.
Oh, oh man.
But,
do you know what that is?
It's like where you have Living End as a combo and then just happen to have like those other combo, like the other combo in it.
I mean, yeah, it's Living End with a dash of Splinter Twins.
That sounds horrible, Erin.
Oh, now you've got standards. Oh, now it's, oh, I like four colors. I like, oh, no, it's too much for me.
I've lost to Living End too many times. The GP where I got DQ'd, first round, of playing Modern, where I, you know, I had not ever played Modern, so I was not aware of what was going on. I played a Living End player, and I just crushed him game one because he didn't draw anything and I didn't understand what he was doing. And then games two and three, I counterspelled the wrong thing because I was bad at Magic and I didn't know how their combo worked, and it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. The whole Blood Moon and, ugh, so many cards that I just don't like.
I have to say, as a Living End player, I do agree with you in that even I wouldn't go near Living Twin. And it's funny because I've somehow become associated with Living End. Anytime something happens with Living End, they will tweet me or they will come up to me at the local game store. And I remember when we were at States the other day, I had one or two people come up to me and be like, Aaron, Living Twin. And I was like, Peter, no. And even I wouldn't go near it. I was like, it's just too busy. I can't really get down with that. So.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta put your foot down.
You have to. You know, I really wish more people would do that. Like I said, I mean, I, you know, without getting on too much of a tangent, I do wish, you know, we talked about it a couple episodes ago, how friends need to tell their friends no sometimes. You know, you need to say to your friend, girl, fix your bra strap, you know, put a mint in your mouth. Or, you know, if they have a really absurd deck idea, girl, just no. You know, friends, just don't let friends do certain things. So
sometimes you get lost in the rabbit hole. It's hard to surface without friends, so.
Or you get caught up in your own little echo chamber. You know, you have nobody to tell you that, so you just think everything's gonna work, and it's like, ooh, just.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So speaking of online games, Hearthstone is available on iOS, which was very well received. Do any of you play Hearthstone?
I play a little bit. I played it when it first came out, and I was really into it at the time. I started playing ranked and was rising up the ranks, and then, I don't know, then we got the puppy, and then I had to spend all my time training a puppy and stop playing Hearthstone so much. But I still like it. It's an awesome game. I just haven't had the time to play it lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I downloaded it and I made it through like the first free things where they're trying to like teach you how to play it. And then I just never opened it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of the same. I went through the like the practice rooms where like you have to unlock each of the decks.
Right.
And I unlocked all of the decks, and kind of like you, Katie, it just didn't really hook me. I think also, too, I played WoW for so many years, and I just didn't want to see certain things again. Where I was
me
like,
too.
I just don't want to see mages and elves and giggliness and, you know, these weird animations. Like, I'm very happy not seeing that again.
Mm.
So, do we think that this is going to light a fire under Wizards and inspire them to maybe put some work into MTGO? Because for a while they were saying Hearthstone ain't shit, Hearthstone is in competition, and now this. I mean, like, what's it going to take?
I don't know. I mean, I went to PAX this past summer, and there was a panel featuring Mike Robles, Graham Stark from Loading Ready Run, and Brian Kibler, where they were talking about Magic and Hearthstone and the different kinds of games that are available digitally these days. And it's really an apples and oranges thing when it comes right down to it. Like, Magic is a game that was designed to be played in paper that happens to be available digitally, and Hearthstone is a digital game. And there are a lot of differences between them, and I don't know that they're really comparable, aside from the fact that they may appeal to some of the same types of people.
Yeah, Marshall Sutcliffe did, so he has a podcast called The One for One, and one of his first, like, three episodes was with a guy, I can't remember his name, but he used to be doing some of the programming for...
John Lokes?
Yes, thank you. And it was kind of interesting to hear his take, because so many people are like, come on, Wizards, fix your shit, do this better, everybody hates Modo, but he was like, there's a lot more that goes into it. And so for people that are interested, I would definitely check out that podcast. But I learned a bunch where I was like, I would have never thought about that line of code costing more than that other line of code. Like, that's not something people think about when they're like, come on, why can't you just fix the game?
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that Modo needs to do something. There's a lot of public frustration, and it's kind of been building, and it feels like it's just getting more and more overwhelmingly negative about Modo.
Mm.
Yeah, I try not to hop on the bandwagon because obviously, you know, I was invited to the Community Cup, and you know, I don't play Modo enough where I haven't experienced the things that other people have. And that's not to say that they haven't happened and that they're not true, but you know, I can only really go on what I've experienced, and for the 2 or 3 or 4 hours a day that I play, it works fine for me. You know, so, but you know, I can't understand how we got here. You know, Jeff Hoagland, you know, is a big critic of MTGO, and he's mentioned bugs that have existed for years that have not been addressed. And, you know, there's just, you know, you have to wonder what is going on behind the scenes that is keeping this from happening, because you're seeing other games innovate and address things so much faster, and I just wish there was more transparency there. Like, maybe if they could say, this is why we're having a problem, or something like that, maybe people would be more understanding.
Yeah, like better communication.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think the issue is one of the popular complaints is that they don't pay their staff enough, where, you know, they keep saying that they have all these job openings, but then when people look at them, they're like, girl, I ain't coming to Seattle for that. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and you know, I don't play Modo regularly, but I've played like 5 or 6 times with friends where we'll do a draft or something, and every experience I've had has been negative. And I'm like, why pay more to draft on this thing where you don't get to keep the cards, and it just messes up and causes you to like lose games and stuff? Like, we did a sealed, and we had a control mirror match, and his deck was really slow and dirtily, and we kept like a 6-lander with like 1 business card, and we drew all 11 land in our top 11 cards. And I was like, I understand that there's variance in Magic, but I feel like this happens more frequently online with their random algorithm than it does in shuffling. Like, maybe we don't randomize cards enough when we're shuffling or something, but I just feel like the variance where that kind of thing happens is much higher online.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Our listener email this week is from Ruben Sanchez, and Ruben writes, "Hello, Aaron, Hallie, Katie, and Chris. I would like to start off by telling you ladies that I love your show. I am a male listener and happily married to an incredible wife that supports my nerdy ways." Yay! Nerdy spouses. "She gets a kick out of your show, too. I'm still working on getting her to play, but I got her at least playing D&D. I call that progress, one step at a time." His words, not ours. "I began listening to your show after hearing the guys from Limited Resources talk about it and have been hooked ever since. The topics you bring up are about magic and real-life stuff, which keeps it from being plain and like everybody else. Thank you for that. I want each of you to know that you are doing a great job and to keep up the good work. I would also like to ask a question. I am an aspiring judge. If you could walk someone through the process from the beginning, how would you go about it? I've already contacted a level 2 judge in my area and taken some practice tests, but I failed all of them." "I don't think they are that easy, but that is just me. Thank you for taking the time to read my email." And I think at some point we've all expressed interest in being a judge. So Katie, how would you recommend that we get started? What would you tell us?
So he's on the right track of finding an L2 in his area. That's basically the first place to start. If you don't have one in your area, like Montana, we all live in one city. So if you don't have one in your area, you can reach out to basically anybody and we can help you find one, or we can walk you through the process from far away. But usually we like to meet candidates in person and just see what's going on. So that's a good first step. He also mentioned taking practice tests online. If you go to judge.wizards.com, that is the site to start taking practice tests. Something to keep in mind is that it's sometimes easy to get discouraged. They label them as easy practice tests, but all the questions that are on the site that are under the easy and hard practice tests were rejects from the real test. So they have these submissions by different people, and there's a guy that goes through them all and, you know, okays them and stuff. But some of the questions are not worded to set you up for success necessarily. Or they're on really like old, weird, you know, keyword abilities like absorb or something that you'd never see now.
That's discouraging.
Yeah. And so like sometimes you take a practice test and you're like, oh, I got a 28%. Well, that really sucks, but that's not always actually an indication of how much you know or anything. So don't let that discourage you.
You know what this reminds me of? Like, not to sound too cruel, but, like, when your dog is hungry, like, you're at the dinner table and you're eating a really scrumptious meal, and, like, your dog is really hungry and looking up at you, like, I want some of that. And then you give him, like, a piece of corn. Like, we're all really anxious to take the judge test. Like, we really want to practice, and we get, like, the scraps. Like, that's not fair.
Yeah. They're not all horrible. Like, but there is, I think, only one guy that goes through it, and it's kind of a full-time job. You know, every time... So when you take the real test, usually it's over things that are in standard right now. So they're coming up with new questions about standard interactions and sorting through old questions. And sometimes things just get pushed under the rug, and that happens. But don't let it discourage you. That's one reason to find somebody who can mentor you face-to-face, is that they can teach you what you need to know, sometimes a lot better than the practice test can.
Now, why does it have to be face-to-face? Like, you couldn't just mentor us on Skype?
Something to take into consideration when looking at judge candidates is that we want to be open and encouraging for, you know, anybody who wants to become a judge candidate, but we also look for, I mean, I guess I look for a certain kind of person, and that's not to say anybody does that or every other L2 does that, but you want somebody who's kind of in good standing with the community and the TO.
Well, there goes me.
Somebody who's not, like, cheating at every F&M and people know that they're kind of a scumbag or anything like that, because once you become a judge, you're viewed as a judge by everyone, whether or not you're wearing the black shirt or not. And so, you know, how you act outside of judging can dictate a lot about, you know, how people see you and thus the program. So I like to make sure that people are, like, doing okay in their community. You know, they don't have to be loved by everyone. They don't have to be, you know, the god or goddess at the store or anything.
Not, like, reading to the blind in their
yeah.
spare time.
But, you know, not somebody who everybody thinks is, like, cheating all the time or stealing draft cards or, you know, somebody like that. We try and keep that to a minimum. So... the actual requirements for becoming a judge are acting as a judge at a sanctioned event twice in the last 6 months. So this could be F&M, and as an L0, which we call is what judge candidates are called, you can be a judge for an F&M. Usually, you know, it's good if there's an L1 there or somebody guiding you, but being entered in WER as an L0 candidate is one of the requirements. And then you have to have a brief interview with and written recommendation from an L2 or higher. You have to obviously pass your test. The required passing percentage is a 70%, I believe.
Okay.
And you should have some knowledge of tournament structures with experience as a player in DCI-sanctioned tournaments. So knowing basic tournament things, you know, for F&M. So for an L1 judge, we look at things like regular rules enforcement. So something good to read would be a document called Judging at Regular, which is how we fix things if somebody messes up something in a game at F&M. This is not like going to a pre-DQ. Are we giving game losses? Nothing of that sort. but, you know, if somebody draws an extra card at F&M, what should you do? Things like that. But knowing tournament structures, knowing how rounds work, how time limits work, what happens when you go to time, things of that nature should be known as well.
Okay. And you also said that you're planning for a judge conference.
Yeah, we're doing a unofficial judge conference. So each region gets some amount of foil packs to take to a judge conference per quarter or per year. I'm not exactly sure. There's going to be one in Wyoming in June, and that's kind of far for some people in Montana to go, so we figured we'd just host our own mini conference. Brooke and I are putting it together. He's one of the other L2s in Bozeman with me.
Is he the one whose jokes never land on Twitter?
Yeah.
I feel so bad. Like, he seems like a really nice guy, cute guy, but every time he tweets me, I'm just like, I don't know how to take you. Like, are you reading me? Like, what's going on here? So
I talked to him about that. I think we got it worked out. I was
he's
like,
a nice guy.
I was like, you don't come across super well. But he was like, I got it. Okay. I'll just won't joke. I was like, okay. Yeah, so we're giving away foils from our collection, Judge Foils, to encourage attendance, and we're just going to have a good time. We're doing a few seminars, and then we're playing Judge Jeopardy, and then we're doing, like, mock matches where the L2s will play against each other, and we'll try and cheat and do devious things, and then we'll have everybody watching and see who catches what, and then go over how to fix it, and things of that nature, so that'll be really fun.
Cool. That makes
I'm
me
sad
wanna...
we can't go.
Yeah.
There's also a pre-TQ on Saturday, the day before, that I'm head judging, so it'll be a magic-filled weekend.
And is it going to be mostly judges playing in the pre-PTQ?
I think we'll have around 10 or so certified judges playing and or participating the next day. And then I think we have 3 to 4 candidates, which is a pretty good number considering how many people we have in Montana for our judge to player ratio.
Well, Judge Jeopardy sounds fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like a free program where you can put in all the questions, and we're going to have buzzers, and we're going to give out like door prizes. We're giving away some play mats and stuff. So it should be fun.
That sounds fun.
So you guys say that you want to become a judge. I have some questions for you.
I want to answer judge questions.
Hallie, Chris, do you want to answer questions too?
Sure.
I'll try.
Bring it on.
I took that easy practice test, and he's right. It is, like, not very easy. And, like, just reading some of the questions without disclosing, obviously, what the questions were, it kind of felt like when you were, like, in high school or middle school or something, you're taking a test, and it's like, train A leaves at this time and gets here, and it's like so many scenarios. I'm like, what? Is there multiple answers to this? Oh shit, there was. And I'm just like, okay, I need to talk to Katie before I do this again. So have at it, Katie. We're here.
We're ready.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you're playing a game and you are on the play, what are the steps and phases that you go through in your turn?
Oh Jesus. Okay. I'm going to write this down.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful to write out things and
visualize.
Okay, so
I'm on the play.
So if you're on the play and you're starting, then you don't have an untap, upkeep, or draw phase. So you just have a main phase, right?
Yes.
So you have main one, and then I guess you also have a combat phase. Yeah, you might play something with haste on turn one, so then you have a combat phase. Do you want all the phases within the combat phase?
If you guys want to give them, that's something you should know if you want to take the test, but we don't have to do it right now if you don't want.
Sure. So there are five, I think there are five phases, or there are five parts of the combat phase. There's beginning of combat, declare attack.
There's five?
Yes, there's beginning of combat, declare attackers, declare blockers, damage, and end of combat.
Oof, that sounds right to me.
And then there's second main and then end step, and I guess cleanup after end step. So that would be my answer.
So in combat, are those phases or steps?
Steps?
Yes. So that's an important distinction.
There's steps in the phase?
Yes.
I don't play aggro decks. I'm like, what is this?
So, let's see. What if I didn't play haste creature? Do I go through combat?
No. Well, yeah. Because I learned this when I played Desecration Demon. Even though you don't have any attackers or you're not attacking, combat is still a phase. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to go with it.
I would say yes also, yeah.
Yep. So you always go through all phases and steps of a turn. Even if you're on the play, you do go through an untap, upkeep, draw, but you don't draw, and you have nothing to untap, and you usually have nothing to upkeep. So you do go through them, but you just don't do any of them.
Oh, interesting. Like
there should be a flowchart.
I could probably design you one.
My friend Adrian actually has little cards. Like, they're really cute. They look like playing cards, and they have, like, all the steps there. They're really handy. And she's actually making, like, a summer version. So if we're in Vegas, we'll have to get a copy.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, they can like fit in your wallet.
Or like multiple copies so I can give them out to people.
There you go.
I'll have to talk to this person. So something that came up at the Pro Tour that I heard about was Soulfire Grandmaster and Rebound cards. So there's kind of two different scenarios that I heard about. One is, let me read you the card, because that's always helpful. Turns out that reading cards helps you succeed. So
it's a helpful skill for judges.
So Soulfire reads, the next time you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, put that card into your hand instead of into your graveyard as it resolves. So there was a few people who had already played a rebound card, and then rebound is going on the stack. And then they wanted to activate Soulfire. Let me look up a rebound card. Hang on.
Okay, so instead of the... Okay, so rebound, I think, exiles it, but then you can cast it from exile at the start of your turn?
During your upkeep.
During your upkeep.
So rebound reads, if you cast this spell from your hand, exile it as it resolves. At the beginning of your next upkeep, you may cast this card from exile without paying its mana cost.
Sure.
So we're putting rebound on the stack and figuring out, can I activate Soulfire and make it work so that your rebound card will go back to your hand? What do you guys think?
No.
Goes tap down, right?
It's like a pancake. I was told it's like resolving. I was told when things resolve, it's like a stack of pancakes. And that you take the pancake from the top first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So walk me through what you're thinking.
I'm just trying to put all these pieces together. I'm like, okay, so which one happens? Okay, so which one happens first? You're saying the rebound happens before Soulfire?
No, I'm thinking you can't, because I think the rebound is an all-in-one deal. Like, I think you can't... Okay, so if the spell was cast from your hand, instead of putting it in your graveyard, like, you're doing that all at once. So, like, you cast it, you can't respond to it being put into the graveyard because it's all at the same time.
It's already like, going into the exile zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, as it resolves, right?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of how, like, I was asking a question about Dark Confidant once, and I was like, can I respond to the Dark Confidant by fetching? Like, let's say I reveal the card and I don't like it, and my friend Matt was like, no, because it's all one thing. You can't break that up.
So you guys are right in that when a spell or ability goes on the stack and starts resolving, you can't do anything in the middle of it resolving. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of a trick question in that Soulfire Grandmaster says the next time you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand, mm-hmm. then you get to do something. And since Rebound is not in your hand anymore,
right.
it does not work. Mm-hmm. Hint, a lot of being a judge is just reading cards for people. Not to sound rude, but a lot of the questions you get are like, how does this work? And you're like, well, right there on the card it says... to do this, and then I'm like, oh yeah, that's how my card works.
So keyword is from your hand.
Yep.
Okay. So talk to them. Gotcha.
And then there is another, you know, along the same lines, if it is in your hand and you have activated your Soulfire and now you're casting your spell that also has rebound, where does it go at the end of it?
Okay, so wait a minute. So you have Soulfire out, mm-hmm. you paid four. Mm-hmm. First, you paid the four, cast the spell from your hand.
Yep.
I'm going to say that the... Okay, so if we go with the pancake theory, so... Because it works for me, I can envision it. Okay, so Soulfire is the first pancake, and then on top of that pancake is the rebound effect, so I'm thinking you pull the top pancake off... and it would rebound before the Soulfire. So I'm thinking it would still get exiled. You wouldn't get it back.
Anybody else?
Would.
You think they would, Chris?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. I'm gonna go with that.
Okay.
Hallie?
I am confused by this one.
This is a train question again. Okay.
So... both of the cards are saying when this spell resolves, do something with it. Mm-hmm. And that's called a replacement effect. So instead of going to the graveyard, our keyword is instead. Now it's going to your hand. Or instead of, let's see what rebound says.
exile it as it resolves, I think.
Yeah. So that's like an implied instead.
Okay.
And so in that case, the person who is being affected by the replacement effect gets to choose what where it goes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So is this kind of like how when Obsidot was a thing that you could use Whip of Erebos? Like, let's say you whip back an Obsidot, but then the Obsidot would normally be exiled because of Whip of Erebos, but you could choose to stack it where Obsidot's bounce ability, like its peace out ability, would hit first? Is sort of like the same thing?
Obsidot kind of just gets his own dealy pop. he comes up a lot, and I don't want to go into it here because it's kind of...
Sure.
Sometimes it gets a little out of hand, but...
in a good way.
Yeah, in an exiling way. and so, let's see. Okay, so if you're at FNM, say you are a judge now, and somebody calls you over and they say, "Judge, I just drew my opening hand and I drew 8 cards." What would you do in that case? They've looked at it, they're sitting there, nobody's done anything, but now they have 8.
I've seen so many different situations. I'm not saying any of them were right or wrong.
Hallie, you need to chime in. We're carrying the load here.
Did they look at the cards?
Yep.
Fuck. Okay.
Try not to curse at him, Chris.
Be like, "Well, you're fucked. See you later." let's see. I'm going to say it's completely out of left field, but if they already drew the cards and they know what they were, I guess, like, they would, I don't know if it's like a known card situation where they would have to show their opponent what they were and put them back on top or something weird. I know some people be like, "I'll just shove it back in my deck and shuffle it," but I've been told that you shouldn't do that, so I'm going to go with that's not an answer.
But
so,
it's FNM, though. I think that would be fine.
Yeah, but then you got wizards that are like, "Psh, I don't want to deal with all that. This is serious business time, whether or not it should be." I don't know. I guess... Yeah, I don't think that they would say you could shuffle it back in. So I'm going to say it's not that, but I'm not sure what the right answer.
So drawing an extra card in your opening hand versus some other time in the game that's not your opening hand is handled in 2 different ways. Mm-hmm. So drawing it in your opening hand, you take 1 at random from the cards, whether you roll a D8 in this case or something like that, and you put it back on top and then you shuffle it. If you draw an extra card sometime in the game, since you cannot uniquely identify that card, you know, if it wasn't previously known somehow, then you put a random card from your hand back on top, and then you leave it there because it would be the next card that you would draw, whether that's at your next draw phase or draw step, I should say. Or another time in the game. So those are kind of handled differently at FNM. But we always try and keep FNM at like a fun, learning, casual environment. So it's more about educating the players rather than punishing them. Whereas competitive is trying to reward the players who know the rules the best. Whether or not you like to think about it, that's kind of how it is. You don't get game losses if you know how to not get a game loss, etc. So those are something that you can learn from the JAR, which is Judging at Regular, which is just a 2-page document on how to fix things at FNM. And I have 1 more question for you guys. Are you ready?
And Hallie better answer.
Okay.
Okay, Hallie, this one's all you.
Oh, goodness.
All right, Chris, back out.
Lucky you, it's Two-Headed Giant, the bane of everybody's existence.
Oh, no. Okay, I've played Two-Headed Giant in enough pre-releases that I might be able to answer this one.
Okay. So usually Two-Headed Giant's on the L1 test in some capacity, so if you hate it as much as everybody else, you're just going to have to suck it up and learn it anyway. So I have a card that says, at the beginning of each upkeep, get a 1/1 Sapperling. Mm-hmm. How many Sapperlings do you get at each upkeep.
So you put a 1/1 Sacreling creature into play on your upkeep? Is that what the card reads?
At the beginning of each upkeep, put a 1/1 green Sapperling token onto the battlefield.
I would say you get one because you only get one upkeep as a group or as a team.
Okay, and during your opponent's upkeep, is that the same?
At the beginning of each upkeep. Okay. So you would get one on each. One on yours and then one on the opposing teams. I guess that's what I would say.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yay. Good job. You know everything there is to know about Two at a Giant.
You have a shared life total for Two-Headed Giant, which comes into play if you're playing things like Sulfuric Vortex.
Yes. And cards but that say also... each opponent are real good.
Mm-hmm. Like a Debt to the Deathless?
Yes.
All you have to do is like tap it for like six and it's like, whee!
Yeah, probably that's, in my experience, the most broken card in Two-Headed Giant that I've played with.
I remember playing in the Return to Ravnica pre-release, and it was me and my friend Caleb, and we were up against an opposing team that had four Lobber Crew.
Oh, no.
And they were just casting, like, random multicolored spells, and being like, Lobber Crew, Lobber Crew.
I love Lobber Crew.
And I went into it, and I was like, this can't be right, and by the end of it, I was ready to punch kittens. It's so not fair. And I heard of similar shenanigans in Theros, like, you would get people that would just take double mono black, and then... Gray Merchant!
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, the fuckery. So, Katie, I assume that we just wouldn't make good judges based on our answers. Like,
oh, no, I think anybody can be a judge. You just have to put in, like, a tiny bit of time and effort, and boom, you're there. Especially okay. If you play competitively. People are very surprised at how much they actually know about the game. But there's, like, certain nuances that you have to learn, you know. You can learn the English language, but sometimes you got to expand your vocabulary just a little bit.
Sure.
It's kind of the same deal.
So, anything else we want to get off our chest before we wrap up the show?
I just have one more question for Katie about the judge thing real quick. So if someone were to come to FNM and they were playing a card that wasn't legal in Standard, how would you handle that situation?
Fuck.
Because it happened to me. Someone dropped a champion of the parish, and I was like, what?
I can't answer this because it happened to me at FNM once.
Okay.
Hallie.
The story behind this is that I once played in an FNM, and a kid brought one of the dual decks to FNM, thinking that all the dual decks were Standard legal. But it was like the Speed versus Cunning one or something like that. And that has all sorts of cards in it from throughout Magic's history. And he cast like a Beetleback Chief at one point. And I was like, that's not legal in Standard, Judge. And so I think for that, what happens is you have to replace any Standard, any cards that are not legal with cards that are legal, even if all you have are just lands or something.
Okay. Because that's what they did. They put a Plains in his deck instead, the judge did. And I'm like, okay. He's like, I'm sorry, your champion of the parish is now my Plains.
So,
I felt bad.
Yeah, you add a land of their choice. Obviously, you don't want to put, like, mountains in, like, a mono blue deck or something.
If you were mean, but... I guess you could.
But, you know, it's really... about having fun. So, you know, as a judge, like, if that happened, and it's some person who's like, I didn't know that, you know, this was an issue, I'd probably sit down with them in between rounds and be like, here, let's try and build you a deck or something. Because you want them to, like, leave having fun. That's always the goal of something like FNM, you know, is to get players interested and make them want to return. Mm-hmm. And if you're just like, well... every card in your deck is now not Standard legal, like you're playing something from 8th edition, like some deck from 8th edition, I'd probably try and like sit down with them and be like, here, let's see if we can build you just something out of the commons and uncommons box or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the general basic rule is basic lands of the player's choice.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all? How can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com. And you can read my articles here on Gathering Magic.
I'm Katie. You can reach me on Twitter at KatieN_14 or by email katie.neal14@gmail.com. And if you have any judge questions or need to help getting in contact with someone in your area, I'd be more than happy to help you with that.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is THKRIZ. That's to Chris. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Tumblr is also to Chris.
And I am Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrusitalydistricts.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. Our email address, if you have any questions or just have any feedback for us, is thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And that's about it. Thank you all so much for listening, and take care of yourselves, okay?
See ya.
Bye. Bye.